comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors. Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. It's talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. And that's not just a cliche. That's a fact. We have a free weekly newsletter. I talk about it every night because I want all the folks that are joining in for the very first time to know about it. And it's called K-Files. This is K-Files Day. Friday is when we begin sending out our K-Files, and it's absolutely free, and all you have to do is go to my website, click where it says K-Files, and subscribe. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. We send it to your email, whatever email you subscribe with. And we don't sell, rent, lease, loan, or any of that stuff. Our email address is to anybody. All right? So we never have, and we never will. And so it's very safe. You won't be spammed as a result of having subscribed. But anyway, we begin right after the show tonight. We will begin sending out the K-Files. So you have time right now, if you haven't subscribed, to subscribe. Let me tell you one thing, though. Sometimes people have email spam filters that they have set up. So if someone sends them an email, that person who sends the email gets an email back in response. And it says, well, I only take email from people I know. So you have to click this to get activated so that I'll be receiving your email. If you've got one of those, you'll never get the K-Files. Because the K-Files is sent out, it's an automated system, okay? You subscribe, it sends you a confirmation email with a link you have to click to say, yes, I intended to subscribe. And then it's an automated system that sends out email, and it's not going to click your link, okay? So you have to either turn that off or use a different email address to receive the K-Files. And I know how frustrating it is because if you do turn it off, you're going, in addition to the K-Files, which you subscribe to, you're going to get a lot of spam. Now, we didn't cause that. It's the nature of the internet. I get up to around 500 spam mails per hour, 24 hours a day. And we have filters that eat all of that, most of it. And we have a contact page where you can use that, and it's got special encoding that gets you through our filters. So I know it can be frustrating, but if you want to get the K-Files, and I hope you do, you're going to have to use an email address that does not have one of those filters on it. Some of you have subscribed 2, 3, 4, 5 times, and you keep saying, I don't know why I'm not getting the K-Files. There you go. That's why, now you know, now you can do something about it. My guest tonight is Jerry Wills. And Jerry did something within the past 48 hours that has set the world a-rocking. We're going to be talking about that right after this. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening was to be Jerry Wills. We have made 12 calls to Jerry and cannot get him on the telephone. I spoke with Jerry just a few minutes before the show, so I do not know. So perhaps if he's listening, or if there's someone near him listening to the show, they can punch him with an elbow and ask him to call in. We would call him, but we did 12 times, 12 calls. Couldn't get him. And so I think from some of what I was hearing with the telephone that on the telephone, I think that that Jerry may be having some difficulty with his telephone. We will proceed as if Jerry were here for just a few minutes. We'll see if he does make contact with us. And then if he does not, we will go open line. When I told you that Jerry had done something within the past 48 hours that had set the world a-rocking, that is the truth. And let me tell you a little bit about it. Jerry has shared his story on this show. He has done so several times, and I think that, yeah, that is Jerry calling in, so hopefully he can hear me at this point. And but we will, well, he was there, and no, he's still there. But Jerry has shared his story on this show, various bits and pieces of it several times, one time pretty much complete. But within the past 48 hours, Jerry stood in front of a television camera and told his story to a worldwide audience on a internet television feed, and his story is rather amazing. Jerry, are you with us?
Kevin, I'm here. I think I've finally managed to get through.
All right. I don't know what happened. We made a total of 12 calls trying to get hooked up with you there, but and one time I heard you say hello, but then you couldn't hear us. But anyway, Jerry, you know, a lot of people know you as a healer. A lot of people know you as an explorer. People know you as a radio host and as a television producer. But this other aspect, this other thing, is has to do with your story and who you really are. And you stood in front of a camera about 48 hours ago and told the world. I want to get into that a little bit. Do you mind?
Yeah, that would be fine.
All right. Jerry, what you have shared with the world is that you are not from this planet.
Well, that is what I believe to be the truth. I don't have any way of validating it. It basically is something that I believe to be true, and I think there are a lot of other folks out there who probably feel the same way. The information that I provided a couple of nights ago was prefaced by saying that I wasn't trying to convince anyone of anything or to change anyone's beliefs, but that this is my story. This is who I believe I am, and this is what I believe happened to me. And I believe it happened principally because I lived through all of it. I've had enough evidence in my life to validate the things that I'd said, but I'm certainly not interested to try and prove it to anyone. It's that I felt the information was something that might help others to understand who they are and would be empowering for them. Not that I was trying to disclose something that would make me special, but I wanted to show other people that they're also special and that it's possible that there are others out there who didn't originate on this planet that have a unique gift to offer the world. And because we're within 18 months of 2012, that it would be an appropriate time to start that dialogue.
Well, Jerry, you have obviously you thought about that there would be people out there, or there could be people out there who know you and like you and respect you as a TV producer, or know you, like you, respect you as a musician. I forgot to mention that. Know you, like you, or and respect you as a radio host, all of those other things. Absolutely no questions about Jerry Wills at all. But then when they hear this story, you know, you run the risk of some of those people saying, geez, this guy's lost it. He's around the bend. Did you think about that before you told your story?
Yeah, it occurred to me. And, you know, there are always going to be those folks that feel that way. And they're welcome to feel however they please. You know, the bottom line is, you know, I decided to disclose this for the benefit of others, not to disclose it so that I could make myself special, because I don't care to be. I'm not trying to prove anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've gone around the bend or lost it. Well, they have a right to feel that way, and if that somehow marginalizes the fact that there are thousands of people alive today because I was able to help them with this unique healing ability, or the adventures that I've brought to the world free of charge are somehow invalidated by this information, then I suspect that they probably are living within a very narrow confines of understanding, and that they would never understand anyway. So it doesn't worry me at all.
On this show, I asked the question one time when we were doing a show dealing with UFO extraterrestrial disclosure. I said, what if they do what all these skeptics say? What if they land on the White House lawn and the little door slides open on the spacecraft and out they walk and they look just like us? Are you going to believe that? Or are you going to think, okay, this is a hoax, this is a movie set kind of thing, they it's all being hoaxed because they look like us? And you know, I got some email from people who said, you know, I never really had considered that maybe they do look like us. And with the exception of the fact that you're exceptionally tall, you do look just like everybody else. I mean, you look like human from Earth, except you're about 12 feet tall. That I said that tongue in cheek, of course. You're what, 6'7"?
No, I'm 6'9".
6'9". Okay. So you're a very tall person, but other than that, you look just like everybody else. I would suspect that there are people that cannot buy that extraterrestrials don't look weird.
Well, of course not, because everyone's been postured to believe along a certain line of thought.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, some of it with good reason, because there are other races of extraterrestrials who are here on this world, and they don't look like people. They aren't very nice, and they basically do as they please. They figure that they're the ones in control, and they're the ones that make the decisions, and we are, as a race of humans, expendable and usable by them. In order to counter that, maybe it's time to understand that the people on this planet didn't originate here, and that there are other worlds where there are people who look just like us. And some of those worlds are far advanced technologically to where we are now here on this planet. And they've sought to reunite humanity, perhaps, and in doing so, have come here both to study and to offer assistance. The real challenge is if they offer assistance in an overt way so that they come down, as you mentioned, on the White House lawn, and they walk out and they look just like us. Well, if they provide enough evidence that they are who they say they are, then the next thing that's going to happen is that they're either going to be considered a threat or an enemy, that they have some secret agenda, or that they basically are wearing a costume. You know, there are so many different aspects of this, but they're going to be looked at as superior. And as being superior, they're going to be asked to provide answers to questions, solutions to problems, and so forth. In my experience, I've seen that people have wanted that. There's a group of people who wanted that kind of contact, so they could either be taken away to another place or have the problems of this world solved by someone who's not from here. I don't believe anyone's going to be taken away to another place, and I don't believe that they're interested in solving problems that we've created. If we as a race on this planet are going to survive, it's going to be because we decided that the ways that we've done things have not been correct, and that we're going to have to take a look at alternative measures in order to ensure peace, tranquility, and the common good for all people. It's not going to be done overtly by someone coming here pointing the way, because if that happens, it doesn't belong to the people of this world, and it won't be something that lasts.
All right. I want to go back for those who didn't hear the previous shows that we did, where you've told your story here. And perhaps did not see your television broadcast a couple of nights ago. So let's go back and talk about how Jerry Wills got here. And by the way, I have said on air before that there were a couple of people that had been on my show that I was certain were extraterrestrial. And Jerry, you may remember, not too long after you and I met, I told you that I said to someone, I didn't say this on the air, but I said to someone that if I know anybody that is extraterrestrial, it's Jerry Wills. Do you remember that?
I do.
And you kind of looked a little surprised because you had not told me anything about yourself at that point. And I won't get into here why I thought you were an off-worlder. Then you shared your story. So let's go back to how Jerry got to Earth.
Certainly. Well, I don't remember the particulars because I was an infant. I have bits and pieces of memory. And I have dialogue that was overheard during my mother's funeral that was substantiating information I'd been told during contact with human-looking extraterrestrials. The basic run of the story is this. I was delivered to an abandoned farmhouse somewhere in Kentucky, let's say. I figure it was Kentucky because of the proximity to Fort Knox. So I was in this farmhouse, delivered there, and I remained there for about 12 hours. Apparently, from what I've been able to find out on my own, the Army Air Corps, or whomever it was, had juxtaposed AM and PM and neglected to pick me up at the appropriate time, and so I remained there for an extra 12 hours. During that time, I became frostbitten over all of my body, almost all of my body. It was later, 12 hours later, actually, which would be the very early, dawn, really, of that following morning, that military personnel came, picked me up, and took me to Fort Knox Hospital. And I don't remember what happened there. I was too young. but I'm told that I remained there for several days, perhaps a few weeks, while my frostbite was addressed and I was able to heal, and at which time it was appropriate, I was handed off to a husband and wife team. They were unable to have children, and I was to be their son. I remained with them. Eventually, when I turned 7 years old, my father died of a massive heart attack. I was there when it happened. And then my mother moved back to Kentucky, remarried, and I lived on a farm out in the middle of nowhere for the remaining years of my life until I was about 18. It was during my 12th year that the first contact was reestablished. I saw something extraordinary. It was a huge, huge craft that was over some trees. I later did research on this and discovered it was also seen in a number of other states. It would be that was in September, I believe. It would be the next summer that I would be down in the woods, hiking around, and I would run into a fellow who would later become a friend of mine, who wasn't from this world, and I had regular meetings with him for about 5 years. And it was during those meetings that I was shown a great deal of information. I was given all kinds of detail, and I was shown how to further refine who I am, and I was able to fully implement the gift that I was born with.
All right, Jerry, we have to step away for a break. It's going to hit us now in about 2 seconds. We'll be back right after this, more with Jerry Wills. We are back, and Jerry, before we get too much further away from the farmhouse, let me ask a question. The way you told that made it sound like that the U.S. Army, that the personnel that came and picked you up at the farmhouse, somehow knew to expect that you would be there. Is that right?
Well, that is the impression that I have. Why else would they have shown up to look for me and to come and retrieve me?
Was this an abandoned farmhouse?
Yeah.
So there was nobody there but you?
Yeah, it was empty. Just wooden floors and nothing on the walls. Just a shell of a place, really.
Well, see, this would imply that there was some rather detailed contact between the U.S. Army, or at least the U.S. military, and the extraterrestrials, wouldn't it?
Well, that's true, and it was probably 13, 14 years ago that I spoke with a fellow quite old who came up to me and said, "You're one of them, aren't you?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" Because I wasn't talking about UFOs. And so he said, in the early 50s, Project Red Light, says, "Does that sound familiar?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, I think you're one of them. Just look into Project Red Light." That's all he said. And he disappeared. I never saw him again. He just went back to the crowd.
And you don't know who he was?
No, I haven't a clue. I don't have a clue.
And so what is Project Red Light?
I don't know. I wasn't able to find any detail about it.
Hmm. Okay, so anyway, they came, picked you up, and you were frostbitten all over your body, and they put you in the hospital at Fort Knox, and then after you were well enough, they handed you off to a man and his wife who were unable to have children, and as it happens, was this man and his wife, or at least the man, was he U.S. Army?
Yes, he was. I don't know what capacity he served in the military. I've not been able to find that out.
Okay, so they took you home. What does your birth certificate say? Do you have a birth certificate?
I do, but oddly enough, there's very little information on there. You know, most birth certificates have a wealth of information about parents and doctors and time of birth and foot stamps and all that. Mine just has a couple lines of text, mother's name, father's name, doctor's name, date of birth, not even a time of birth. And that's all. There's really no information on that at all.
Okay, so after your adopted father passed away, you were 7 years of age when that happened. Your mother remarried, goes back to Kentucky, and you're raised in Kentucky.
Yes.
And you had contacts with off-world or extraterrestrial people during the time you were growing up. How often?
Well, it was at least once a week.
And what were these meetings like? Well, let's go to the first one. How did you know that this person was not from Earth?
Well, I didn't know that for a fact. The only thing that caused me to believe that they were who they said they were initially was the fact that they arrived in what we would call a flying saucer. It looked like a big disc, probably, I don't know, 30, 40 feet across. It would settle down in this stand of trees, and then, you know, a door would slide open or just be there. It was kind of hard to tell if it slid or just appeared. I never really saw it do one or the other. And then these folks would get out. They would come and sit with me on a log, or we'd stand or go over and sit under a tree, and we would talk. This was happening in the middle of the night, but there was enough light from this thing to where you could see around it pretty good.
Okay, and this was happening every week, and I think you said for about 5 years?
About 5 years, maybe every 2 weeks, but at least every 2 weeks, sometimes every week.
What did they tell you? What were you talking about?
Well, a great number of things. Principally, what they were doing in the beginning was just having conversations, and the conversations would last 15, 20 minutes, and then it was time for them to go, and they'd leave. They didn't really stay that long. The content basically had to do with a variety of things. Later in the duration of these contacts, they showed me things. They showed me, they had different people show up, and these different folks would be like a teacher, really, and they would tell me about this, that, and the other, and whether it would be electronics or chemistry or physics or astronomy, geology. I mean, there's just a whole wide range of things that we would have discussions on. They'd ask me questions, and I'd ask them questions, and then it was time, we would leave. The unique thing was, when they would first start talking, it would be with our voice, but then within moments, it switched off to telepathic communication. And it was a lot easier to have a conversation with them that way. At least it seemed to be the case for myself. Eventually, there was a point towards the end of the contacts. I think I was probably 16 or 17. This continued until the summer of I would turn 18 in September, and this would be the summer of my 17th year, that they started showing me things that were going to be ahead, things that were coming. And the reason why they were giving me the information was because there were things that were ahead for everyone on this world, and that they wanted me to be prepared so that when the time came, I would know what I needed to do in some respect. And I got to see some pretty astonishing pieces of information. It was like they were time travelers. They seemed to know what was ahead. But they always said that you know, it could go in one of two paths, the path of peace or the path of, let's say, war. And they were hoping that everything would move to the path of peace. Well, the things they showed me eventually did come to pass, and the very first wake-up call I had on that front was when Desert Storm occurred. One of the things they'd shown me was a newspaper, and the newspaper said the world goes to Riyadh. And that was the inception of a period of time where things start to change dramatically over the course of the next couple of decades.
Jerry, did they tell you, did you ever ask them, where are you guys from? And did they tell you?
Actually, I did ask, and they told me, basically, you know, they were from a collective of different worlds where there are people like ourselves, and that there were some places where there was life and the people didn't look like us at all. There was on at least one occasion that I met some other off-worlders who didn't look like humans at all. They were probably, I'm guessing, like 5 foot tall. You know, the Whitley Strieber grays?
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of spindly and they're gray. They're short. These were more tall and they were bluish white in color. They looked very similar, but they didn't look the same. They were. They said that they were a completely different race.
Did these people that were meeting with you, are they the reason that you think that you're not from here? Did they tell you that, or is it something you've just sort of surmised?
Well, when I was, let's say, 13, there were some things going on in the household that were very unpleasant. My stepfather was pretty heavy into drinking. And my mom, she was putting up with that, had a couple of daughters. And I was the butt of his anger, usually. So I was pretty unhappy. And I was told during one of these contacts that if I wanted to leave, that they understood things were terrible for me, and if I wanted to leave, then it would be fine. And I said, well, no, I can't leave my mom. And they said, well, she really isn't your mom. And they explained this to me. Well, I promptly felt, you know, there's something wrong with this story. So I went home and told my mom. Of course, she kind of flipped out and produced my birth certificate and said, see, this proves that you're my son and no one can take you away from me. Who told you this? And I told her, she says, I don't want you going into the woods again. I don't want you talking to this. Well, you know, this is one of the times when this sort of thing was mentioned to me, but it really wasn't something that was hammered into me or suggested more than that one time. The next time I heard anything about it was when one of them showed up when I was 38 years old to tell me that my mother was going to die. He told me when she would die and that if I wanted to see her again, I needed to go where she was so I could. And I didn't. I told him I wasn't going to. And he said, well, there's going to be information that will come to you that might be disturbing. We don't want you to become emotionally distraught about this, so we need to tell you who you are and the details of your being here on this world, and proceeded to tell me the whole story. Well, my mother died as predicted, on the day it was predicted, and it was about 5 days later at the funeral that one of my siblings, whom I also believe was adopted because she couldn't have children, and I found out later why. She overheard a conversation between some men who wanted to know if I had ever been told the truth about myself, if I had ever been told, you know, about these details, and she overheard them talking. She confronted them, and they promptly clammed up, giving her just a little bit of information. She then gave me a call and said, I think you better sit down. I have some information that is going to be very disturbing to you. And I said, you know, just tell me, what is it? And then she told me what she had overheard, which was very much the same as what I'd been told, you know, about a month or so earlier when this person appeared in my room. So it was disturbing, and it did leave me feeling quite adrift emotionally. It's one thing to have an extraterrestrial encounter and have something like this related to you. It's an entirely different thing when you hear it coming from someone outside of that circle, someone who's totally unconnected to it. So it took me a while to get my mind around this and to really get my feelings clear on what these details meant.
All right. We're going to step away for a break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Jerry Wills this evening, and you are, folks, hearing something, some of you for the first time. That is, I am absolutely sure, raising eyebrows around the world. And yet, this is not the first time Jerry has shared this information. Jerry, there was another time... right after your father died, when the Army guys showed up and tried to take you back, right?
Right. We were living in Denver at the time. And it was the day after he died. It was the very next morning. And there were a group of men who showed up at the basement apartment where we had been living, and they insisted that my mother relinquish me to them. There were some guys in uniform and some guys in black suits, like lawyers. I don't know what they were or who they were. I was 7 years old. I'd seen these guys before. My father had introduced me to some of them, and they insisted that they were going to take me, and she insisted that that was not going to happen. And she basically got pretty irate with them, told them to get the heck out, in much stronger language, and then convinced them to leave. She immediately packed a couple of suitcases, and we got in the car, and we took off and went to my uncle's house, who lived across town, across Denver, in Aurora. And we stayed there for about 5 days. My uncle was ex-military also, and he'd been in the Korean War. He was not the type of person who would take too kindly to anyone giving my mom any grief. That was her brother. And then it was arranged that we would take off, and we did so, took off and headed out from Denver, and ended up in Kentucky 2 days later.
Okay, now we fast forward to age 38. One of the extraterrestrials appears to you and tells you that your mom is going to die. He gives you the date when that's going to happen, and he tells you the story of your origin, that you were brought here by them. And if you will, tell us a little bit about why. Why were they bringing babies to planet Earth, and were they bringing babies, or were they just bringing you? Were you the only one?
No, I wasn't the only one. They said that there was a program that had been figured out. Excuse me, where there were going to be quite a few who were brought here, and not all of them had human lineage. In other words, there are worlds out there beyond our own where there are people who look just like us, and on those worlds, somehow they figured out that they were going to let their children be brought here for the greater good of this world. And some of those worlds didn't have people that looked like us, and as a result, they were, I guess they were implanted. I don't know how it worked. I only know about myself, really. But they said that it was a worldwide thing that had taken place. And that the idea was that instead of them coming here trying to offer help, which would be misconstrued.
Yeah, we can barely hear you, Jerry.
All right. How about that?
Oh, that's outstanding.
All right. Instead of them coming here offering help, which might be misconstrued, probably would be, instead what they would do is they would bring members of their kind here, members from their greater society, and they would be left here to grow and become a part of this world, to integrate into society, to be here, to be a part of everything that's happening here, and as a result of having lived here our entire lives, we would have a right to have a voice, and we would be enabled to use that voice to make suggestions and to offer help however we could. And it wouldn't be coming from the stars directly. It would be because, excuse me, we lived here, we understood this place, and we had ideas and things to share that might make a difference.
Okay, the next thing that happens is your mother does die on the date predicted, 5 days or so later. At the funeral, one of your siblings, one of your sisters, overhears a conversation between some men at the funeral where one of them is asking the other one whether or not you've ever been told the truth about who you are. And yeah. She calls you. Now, did she hear them say what that truth is? Did she hear what the story was?
She didn't hear all the details of it, except that I had been delivered to Fort Knox under mysterious circumstances, that I had been kept secretly kept away from everyone else, and that my mom and dad had been chosen to raise me.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't understand why that would be.
Mm-hmm. Did you tell her what you knew about it?
Yes, I did.
What was her response?
Well, she just didn't know what to say because she was pretty much shocked by the news as well.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked with her about that since then?
Yeah, I have. Within the past few years, she and I have met again after decades of not really having any contact, and these discussions have taken place, and I've told her more about what I know, and, you know, basically, like I've mentioned here to start this show, telling her, I don't expect you to believe this. This is just what I know.
Mm-hmm. How did she respond to that?
She said that she always felt that there was something very different about me, that I was a very unique person, and that she'd always looked up to me, and that she just didn't understand, because she was just a baby, you know, she's just a small teenage girl, really, when we started losing contact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But she always felt that there was something very unique and good about me, that she always felt I was a good person.
Okay, now, I think it's interesting, and but I don't think, I really don't think there's anything mystical about it, other than it's just an interesting synchronicity or coincidence. Your birth date is on September 11, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, for a number of years, these people were meeting with you on your birthday, right?
Yes. It was every 10 years. After I turned 18, I didn't have contact with them again until 10 years later when I was 28. At that time, I met with them. It was in the desert in Nevada, and it's actually right there next to where Area 51 is. But at the time, I didn't know what Area 51 was. I don't think anybody really knew that it was there or what any of the details were about it. I met with them there. And then it would be another 10 years, and they showed up in my bedroom. Once that took place, another 10 years would go by, and I was expecting contact with them again because every 10 years they were showing up. Well, they had told me to watch the signs, to pay attention to world events, and that I would see the direction the world was going to go. That when I saw that it was going one direction or the other, I would know the things that I needed to do in order to be better prepared for what was coming, which would be 2012. And on my birthday, on my 48th birthday, is when the terrible events happened in New York City that took down the Twin Towers. And I knew at that moment that the direction the world was going to take was not one of peace.
Did they meet with you on that date?
No, I haven't had contact with them since.
So the next time you would expect to have contact would be September 11, 2012. We have to step away for a break. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Jerry Wills here this evening, and Jerry, we were right in the midst of it when the break took over. But look, I got a couple of questions I want to ask before we proceed. Your next contact is scheduled or expected, I should say, September 11, 2012. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, of course, a little more than a month later is December the 21st, 2012. Well, let's see. That would be a little more than 2 months later. No, a little more than 3 months. Well, let's see. September 11 and then October 11 would be 1 month. November 2, yeah, it would be a little more than 3 months. We have December the 21st, 2012, which is the date that so many people are looking to because of the Mayan calendar, and a lot of people are looking at that date with a lot of fear. What do you sort of anticipate will happen on September 11, 2012? Do you anticipate they're going to meet with you, and what do you think they're going to be talking about?
Well, I never know what they're going to be talking about. I never have a clue. And that date, September 11th, is a point of inception. It's not the date that they usually contact me. It can be anywhere between there and the end of December.
Okay, we can barely hear you again.
All right, sorry. The the September 11th date is a point of beginning, let's say, and they could show up anywhere from there to the end of December. And I never know when it's going to happen. I figure that it must be within the range of what works best for them as to when they show up. What would they talk about?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know what they would talk about.
Have you ever been on board one of their spaceships?
Yes, twice.
Jerry, one of the things that we have heard from a couple of different sources about these spacecraft is that while it may look like 30 or 40 feet across on the outside, when you go on the inside, it's as if you've stepped into a whole new dimension because everything is gigantic. There's a lot of room inside. Is that the way their spaceships are?
Well, that's how it seemed to me. It was really a bit staggering to go inside and to see so much more room. It wasn't something that I was thinking about, you know, as far as let's see if it looks bigger, because it never occurred to me, but it just did. It just looked larger on the inside.
Have they ever taken you off world?
On one occasion, I finally convinced them that I wanted to see what it was like to ride, to go inside, to go somewhere. So what they did is they finally agreed, and we went inside. I never went inside on any of the other occasions before this. I could look inside, but I didn't get to go inside. On this particular occasion, I did go inside, and it was larger. Went around a walkway, went into a room, and took some steps down. It really wasn't steps. It was steps, but it was a ramp. It was all sort of the same thing. But anyway, went inside, and there was a hole in the floor. And as I watched, the ground just pulled away. It's like I was watching a TV. So the ground pulled away and went through the clouds, went high above the earth, and got to see what the earth looks like from, you know, quite an altitude, apparently, and then proceeded to go to the moon. And didn't go and land there, but flew past it, and they showed me places on the moon where there were different things parked. And
no, wait a minute. What do you mean, different things parked?
Well, there was this one thing that was just huge. It looked like a pipe that had been sliced down the middle, and it was two halves of a pipe joined together at the edges, and it was just sitting on the surface of the moon. And they explained to me that that was one of their larger craft, and that when it lifted up, it joined back together again, and it looked like a huge tube. Well, I'd never seen it put together, but I have seen some videos. One that was taken in Colorado, and another that was taken by, I think, the Russian space probe going to Mars. And both of these showed something that looked like a very large tube, and it looked pretty much like what I'd seen all those years ago.
In the course of all of your contact with these folks, did they ever tell you where you're from? Did they ever tell you what your home planet is?
They told me that there was a star called Tau Ceti, T-A-U-C-E-T-I, two words. That's what it's known as here. And that the name of the planet was Lonulos. And that that's about as much as I know about it. I saw some pictures and some details, but, you know, it's kind of hard to go beyond that much of a description because it just didn't have, there just wasn't that big of a difference between there and here.
Now, the pictures that they showed you of Lonulos, were they pictures taken at a distance? For instance, if you were in a spacecraft and looking at it from space, or were these pictures from down on the surface?
They were on the surface, looking out across an ocean, looking out across a forest, looking out across a city, a grouping of buildings, mountains with snow.
So it looked pretty much like here, right?
Yeah, it looked very much like here. You know, the only difference I could see was that it just seemed to be, I don't know, it was like the colors were just slightly different, but, you know, I couldn't tell you how different it really was. It's just some of the colors just looked, you know, strikingly more vibrant, perhaps. The sky looked a little, instead of blue, it looked a little bit greener.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like if you had a bad photo at times where some of the things just didn't look right, but that's what it supposedly looked like normally. So, you know, I don't know. I couldn't tell you firsthand.
When you saw these photographs and they were telling you that this was your home planet, did you have any affinity for it? Did you feel drawn to it, like you wanted to go there?
Well, I asked them if I could go. I did feel drawn to it. But, you know, I didn't want to go there to stay. I just wanted to go there and see it firsthand. And they weren't photographs. This was on, well, it's kind of like a computer monitor, really. It was a display screen.
And I'm assuming they said, no, we're not going to take you there. Is that right?
They said that if I left, I would have to stay there. And I didn't want to stay there.
So which place is home for you? There or Earth?
Here, Earth. This is home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I was telling folks the other night, it really doesn't matter where you come from. You know, where you're from is insignificant. What matters is where you are and your state of being while you're there. You know, there are people that are from Europe. There are people from Brazil. You know, these are just different places, and they're not in your local vicinity. And yet, they show up. They look different, perhaps, or maybe they look the same, and it's surprising. You learn from them what they are and what their culture's like, I suppose.
Well, you know, I can identify with that because I am partially Celtic. In majority, I'm Celtic, but from two different places, Ireland and Germany. And I've had people over the years ask me if wouldn't you like, you know, to go reconnect with your Celtic roots in Ireland, and, you know, or wouldn't you like to go reconnect with your Celtic roots in Germany? And the answer to that is no. Well, why not? And I've been asked this. I have been asked this more than once. Well, why not? I don't know. I mean, I'm not Irish. I'm not German. I was born here, and I just don't feel drawn to that. Now, some people, maybe they do. I don't. I'm part Native American. Don't you want to go to the reservation and reconnect with your Native American roots? No, I'm fine right where I am. Thank you. You know?
That's how I feel, too. You know, I've been here for a long time, and I feel quite an affinity for this place. I feel like this is my home. This is where my interest lies. I have a history here right now, and that history is checkered with successes and failures like everyone else. I have so many things in common with so many people who are listening tonight. Just because I believe that I might be from someplace else, I might not be. There's no way for me to prove that, and it really isn't important.
Okay, but how, you know, what percentage of certainty would you assign to it? As far as you're concerned, how certain are you?
I'm 100% sure.
Okay. And but you're also 100% comfortable with someone that says, I think this guy is all wet.
Yeah, that's fine, because I don't have anything to prove.
Mm-hmm.
you know, relating this story, like I said before, it's not about trying to, you know, there's no agenda with this. There isn't an agenda to where I have something to sell or something to gain. I basically am offering this information because there are 18 months left before 2012, and there are a number of people who are out there that believe that there's something unique and different about them as well. And if I relate my story as to who I am, it just might give them permission to be who they are, to see themselves in the truth of who they feel they are. But it doesn't matter if they're from another world or from this world, if they have unique ideas, if they have a perspective that might make a difference in the way that things happen over the next 18 months and beyond, and they have something significant to add, to contribute, something good that they can do to make this a better place, that's what's important. If I have an agenda at all, it's to empower those folks so that they feel comfortable being themselves, but nothing more.
I have a good friend in Australia by the name of Greg. And he's a good friend because of he is a friend because of the fact that we served together in East Timor. And I was in East Timor for 2 years. And that's where I met him. He and I worked together. And we became good friends. Greg had a saying that I really, really latched on to. I really liked it. And that is, different doesn't mean wrong.
Sure.
One of the things that I find to be the most irritating about some folks on the planet is their idea that if you're different, there's something wrong. And of course, they are using themselves as the standard for what's supposed to be right. And if you're different from that, then you're wrong. Well, different doesn't mean you're wrong. And, you know, I like cake and I like ice cream and I like coffee and all of it's different, but none of it's wrong.
Right. You're absolutely correct. The people that would have something negative to say about statements I've made and the beliefs that I have about myself basically would be speaking, I think, from a perspective that they have it figured out and they know what is and what isn't correct. And that's why it doesn't bother me. I've seen this so much. And the reason why the world is in trouble is because there are too many of those with a narrow mind that won't accept that there's something greater, possibly, that's available to them personally. It isn't that there's a debate whether there are or are not UFOs. There are. That's a foregone conclusion. And it doesn't matter if there's a debate whether the extraterrestrials look like humans or look like ants or look like whatever. They look like whatever they look like.
Mm-hmm.
The people on this world need to understand that they're not alone in the universe. And it's time to wake up to that. And if you're waiting for disclosure, disclosure is going to happen in a much different way than what you suspect is going to be. It's not going to be as overt as you might expect. And the secrets that are being kept by the governments around the world concerning what's going on, really, are secrets being kept because there is a balance of power that has to be met between nations and between the nations and their people. The time has come for that secrecy to be lifted and for the truth to be known, but the only way it's going to be known is if the people who know the truth tell it. And that's one of the reasons why I figured it was time that I said something. We're on a countdown in my mind. We're on a countdown. I know something that I feel is relevant and poignant that might be useful to some. It won't be useful to everyone.
Jerry, you're fading in and out. You need to be a little closer to your phone.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So it's time for, you know, information. made available. And it doesn't matter if everyone agrees or finds it useful. That's not the point. The point is that there will be some who do find it useful, who do derive from it some information that may, in some way, allow them to find the truth within themselves.
You were talking about there's this question of a balance of power between nations and between the leaders of those nations and their people and so forth. You know, there is an old maxim, and it's very old, that says knowledge is power. Knowledge, you know, that I've come to think that's not true. Knowledge is freedom. Secrets are power.
I agree completely.
So what we're seeing is, you know, last-ditch efforts to keep secrets, because once the secrets are out, people will have the knowledge, and once people have the knowledge, they have freedom.
Right.
Now, freedom runs two directions. It's freedom from something and freedom to something. So what is it free from? Well, free from the need to have puppet masters running our lives. That's one thing. And the other thing is free to what? Well, it's free to fully be what you are, and everyone else can be fully what they are. And nobody really has to be concerned about what anybody else thinks about what they are. And I think that's going to be a very important, very important day. Now, Jerry, in light of that conversation that we've just had, there are people who think that anything having to do with extraterrestrial life is of the devil. If it's extraterrestrials, it's demons, and it's deception of the devil, etc. So let me ask you, as a deception of the devil, what you would say about that?
Well, of course, my personal theology doesn't incorporate a devil.
It does or does not?
Does not.
Okay.
You know, I personally believe that people have free will if they choose to exercise it. But as far as personal theology, you know, if people think that extraterrestrials are of the devil, then they're free to believe that. And I acknowledge their free will and their ability to do so. But the greater the degree of understanding, the less that they'll think in those terms, but they have to be willing to acquire a new perspective in order to come to a new understanding.
It is a little frustrating, as you know, because you and I have had these conversations personally, face-to-face. A little frustrating for me to run into folks who are absolutely determined that anything extraterrestrial is evil, because those folks normally, and I'm not saying this to be critical, it's just an observation, normally they also will tell you that they believe the Bible is the Word of God. Now, that's not always the case, but that's where a lot of this comes from, is from that group. And I'm not opposed to that, if that's what they want to believe, the Bible's the Word of God. But, you know, if you're going to do that, you got to acknowledge the fact that not all extraterrestrials could possibly be evil if you believe what that book says, because it says the God that's in that book is an extraterrestrial. He's not from here.
That's correct.
You know, the one that the God that's mentioned in that book, how could he be from here if he made here? If,
right.
You know, he pre-existed here. And so if he made Earth, he couldn't be from Earth, therefore he is extraterrestrial. So, but you know, I don't really have an axe to grind with that, except you know, it's just sort of the way it hits me when it comes up is you know, oh please, come on, open your eyes, open your mind, think about what you're actually saying. You know, when you tell us that all extraterrestrials are evil, but you're telling us, you've told us that there are extraterrestrials that think they own this place and that they own us and they have a right to do whatever they want to with us. Isn't that what you told us?
Yes, that is correct.
Now, where are these guys from?
Well, you know, I'm not really sure where they're from. I don't have all the answers. But what I've been told about what they're doing is that they've been harvesting people from this world for a very long time. And in doing so, they take those that they've harvested and they take them to other worlds where they're allowed to grow and multiply. They're a workforce. And those beings who take them there are considered to be their gods. They look at them as though they're gods. They worship them and they serve them and do their bidding and do what they ask. And as far as they're concerned, these beings are gods. And there is a closed loop there because there isn't any other source of information available to them.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Jerry Wills this evening, and he's talking in some detail, discussing in some detail his amazing story about his origins. Now, we were talking about these extraterrestrials that are here that don't have our best interest in mind, but have their interest in mind. Jerry, would these be the same extraterrestrials that the Sumerians came into contact with?
Well, it could be.
It could be. I really don't know who it was the Sumerians were connecting with. I just don't know, and it's part of what the research has been for Kathy and I as we've gone to you know, other countries and then look for evidence of you know, influence. And, you know, we found all kinds of high technology remnants. But we haven't really found a detailed answer as to who these people were. And that's part of what we've been looking for, is to try to find some evidence that would support, you know, some of the things that people already suspect, being that this world has been visited in the past. And in doing so, if we find it, of course, then we make it available at Expeditions TV, so that they can see for themselves and draw their own conclusions.
Are the people on your planet generally as tall as you are? Or are you an exception there like you are here?
No, I think, you know, from what I've seen, people are people, and they're as different as people are here. There isn't a standard or, you know, there are as many differences there as there are here, let's say.
Okay. Now, the reason I ask that... Okay. The reason I ask that, Jerry, is in a previous show, you told us about one of your expeditions in South America where you went into an area where the people there... There's a lost city there, not far from this village, and way up in the mountains. And those people knew the story about these very tall people from the stars, these gods or whatever, who had built that lost city. And they had blonde hair, and they were very tall. And you showed up. You're 6 feet nine. You had long blonde hair, and you had to convince them that you were not one of those. And then you talked about climbing up to this lost city and seeing the stone chairs and tables and so forth that were made for people that obviously were 9 feet tall or 12 feet tall, very, very, very huge. So that's why I was asking if the people on your home planet are very, very tall. Now, in that village that you told us about in a previous show, did those people have any idea, the villagers, did they have any idea where these giants had come from?
Well, what you find throughout the Andes is that the people in the outback, let's say, that are removed from civilization, their cultural mythology relates very heavily to the Pleiades. And the Pleiadians apparently are tall, and they believe that the Pleiadians have been there, that they come and go, and they are still, you know, likely to show up again.
Well, you know, one of the things we've heard about the Pleiadians is that they are not hostile, and yet these people were afraid. Why was that?
I have no idea. They, you know, they didn't really fully disclose a rationale for their apprehension. I think it probably had something to do with the fact that these were very different people, something that in their mythology, or at least in their remembrance, happened a couple of centuries ago. And, you know, had been there, maybe it was more than a couple centuries for all we know. It was maybe 1,000 years ago. But they had shown up, and they'd put their places on these high mountaintops. And maybe they were afraid of them because the locals were trying to go up where they were at, and whoever it was that built the cities didn't want to be disturbed, and they had you know, the means to repel the locals, because, you know, you have to remember that during the time, let's say 1,000 years ago, a lot of these locals were warlike tribes, and they were battling each other. So it could very well be that, you know, whoever had built these cities was seeing to it that they weren't going to be bothered by these petty skirmishes between small villages.
And we have today a very easy to understand sort of a model for that. And it's not, it doesn't have to do with war and petty battles, but just take a look at the paparazzi. Anybody that's considered to be star quality, you know, celebrity, and the paparazzi just hound them to death, and in some cases quite literally to death. Because they have more money, more glamour, more fame. So I can easily see how we humans might paparazzi the extraterrestrials to a point where they would say, you know, enough is enough, and set up some kind of situation where we are repelled from their encampment or cities or whatever. Now,
sure.
Do you consider yourself, I mean, if I were just straightforward to ask you this question, give me a straightforward answer. Are you extraterrestrial?
Well, I can't answer that honestly with an absolute, but it's what I believe. I think so.
Maybe, but I can answer the question with an absolute, but it may be because I'm wrong. You follow my reasoning there? Sure. Very often when we are absolute about something, it turns out we're wrong. Very often that happens. But, see, I think we are all extraterrestrial.
Well, I think so, too. I think everyone listening has some lineage that is traceable back to the stars. You know, some other world, some other time. I've been shown that people did not originate here on this planet, that they were brought here, and that the realities of you know, who we are on this world has been misconstrued for the purposes of maintaining some sense of control over the people here. So,
well, see, again, knowledge is not power. Knowledge is freedom. Secrecy is power. And, you know, I really think we're watching this old paradigm, and you've heard me call it the paradigm of power. I think we're watching it in its death spasms, because they're losing their grip on the two things. They're losing their grip on the secrets. A lot of the big secrets are coming out, and they're losing this awe that the public has had about the secrets. I mean, it's getting to the point where the public, you know, is saying to these secret keepers, okay, look, keep your secrets. We don't care. It just doesn't matter to us. Just keep your secrets and go away and leave us alone. And so the secrets are not having the puppet string kind of power that they used to have. Even the secrets they are able to keep just simply are irrelevant to us and go away, you know?
Sure. Well, you know, the thing is that if you have great secrets, whether you have them or not, the notion that you might have them certainly gives you an advantage over those who want to know answers.
Well, it gives you an advantage over anyone who really cares about the secrets. But if you reach a point where the public is just worn out with it and they just don't care anymore, okay, keep your secret. I don't even want to know your secret. Go away. Take your secret with you. Once they get to that point, the puppeteer is out of business.
Exactly.
And see, I think that's why, or that is why I think we're seeing this power paradigm in its death throes. And they're doing, you know, really drastic things to try and scare the hell out of us so we'll come back to them for their secret solutions. My attitude is take your secrets and go away, you know. Just leave us alone. We'll do all right without the secrets.
Certainly. I agree with you. What we really need is for people to stop looking for the answers to secrets that may not even be valuable and start looking for the answers of their existence, the answers of their own divinity, to find out who they are truly, because it's a secret no one can really keep from you if you start looking.
I was about to say, I don't think that's a secret, and then you said it's a secret no one can keep from you if you start looking. It's true. It's true. You know, being who you are is as simple as breathing your next breath.
That's right.
You just be who you are. Now, for some people, though, and let's talk about this a little bit, because you've engaged in this some tonight, quite a lot. Some people are so uncomfortable with having to say, you know, I don't know. But several questions I've asked you about here tonight, you've said, well, I don't know that. And you were comfortable with that. How can someone get to the point of saying, you know, I don't know about that and that's okay? How can they get there?
Well, if you don't know, that immediately brings about a question. Why? Why don't you know? Mm-hmm. If you can ask that question and then start looking for an answer to it, then you might be able to answer it. Maybe you can't. In my case, there are several things that I've talked about tonight that I can't validate, and I can't ask the question of anyone. I just simply don't know. And it has to be all right, because what are you going to do if it isn't all right? You can't become obsessive about it. There are too many other things to know to let one thing hang you up.
Yeah, that's a good approach.
It's okay to be a person who doesn't have all the answers. There's no requirement to know everything.
That is true. That is true. You know, golf is a whole lot like the new paradigm. In that, in golf, you're really playing against yourself. You're playing against the last game. You're trying to do better and have a better score than your last round. And from that perspective, golf's a whole lot like life. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Jerry Wills this evening and talking about some rather amazing stuff. Jerry, as we went to break, I said, you know, life really is a lot like golf, or it should be, in that, you know, you're really not competing with anybody else. You're just competing with yourself to be better today than you were yesterday. And there's a tremendous amount of freedom in that. I get emails from people that talk to me about, you know, well, your competition over here, Jeff Rentz, or your competition over here, George Norrie, and then they'll say this, 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 and this. That's not my competition. I don't have any competition. They have their show. I've got my show. And I'm not in competition with anybody except me. I want to be better today than I was yesterday. And they've got their shows to tend to. So let me get your comments on that philosophy, and then I've got another big question to ask you.
Well, my comment is in alignment with yours, Kevin. I agree with you completely.
Well, that was simple.
You stated it so eloquently. How could I improve upon that?
All right. I thought of, during the break, I thought of this question that I should have asked a lot earlier, but I didn't think of it earlier, so I'll ask it now. On your home planet, and let me see, I wrote it down somewhere here, and now I can't find it. Starts with an L, there we go. Lumulus, is that it?
That'll do.
That's close enough? Okay, on Lumulus... are the conditions virtually identical to what they are here, or did you have to be physically altered by them before they dropped you off here so you could survive here?
Well, I don't know absolutely that that is where I'm from. That's what I was told. That's the information I was given. And from what I saw, the conditions there are really no different than they are here.
Have these guys ever told you anything that didn't turn out right, that didn't pan out?
No, they never have.
Okay, so you have a high degree of confidence then that their information that you are from this planet, Lumulus, you have a high degree of confidence that that's correct information. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Do you think you're ever going to go there? Do you think there's ever going to be a time that you will go there and visit or even stay?
No. No, as I understand it, I'm here for the duration.
What does that mean?
Well, I'm here until I'm no longer alive. You know, it's this is my world. This is my home. This is where I am. I just happen to be from some other place, apparently. But, you know, it's just like if you moved here during the 1800s from England, and now this was your home here in America, this is home. And I haven't any inclination to consider going anywhere else. This is where I am. This is home.
You know, one of the things that people say very often is they'll refer to DNA and they'll say, well, if so-and-so really is an extraterrestrial, the DNA ought to show it. But that would not be the case if humans, first of all, if what we're calling humans, and you know because we've had this conversation, I don't think we're human. But I'm probably nuts. But if humans are seeded here from out there, then out there where our origins are, the DNA would be the same as what we have here.
It would be very similar. You know, there would be cultural differences, of course, but I don't think there would be something that would be overtly detectable.
All right, we're just a few minutes from the end of the show. Jerry, one of the things that's happening right now as you and I speak is the Earth is moving towards this straight-line conjunction with the center of the Milky Way galaxy. This is supposed to happen, and this center, when we align with it, is called the Dark Rift. When we align with this, there are people who say, and by the way, I've heard this from some a source high and inside, and that's all I'll say about it, that they are convinced that there will be, it's like throwing light switches on for the DNA we have that they are all calling junk DNA, that it's going to light up and come to life. What do you know about that, if anything?
Well, a little bit. DNA communicates using light, and light as a language is something that, you know, when the light from the center of this galaxy, it becomes fully illuminated onto, you know, our vicinity in space, and it's already started to happen, that it's going to cause a shift in the amount of light, the DNA, in our bodies, as well as the plants and the animals and the bugs and everything. Everything has DNA in it. And it's going to increase the amount of communication from the center of the galaxy to every living thing that's on this planet. If the light successfully makes it through the atmosphere and we successfully expose ourselves to it, we could hide away in the darkness, of course, then it's going to have a profound effect on the next step in the evolution of humankind here on this world. And that effect is going to be pretty well determined by the mentality and the temperament of the people. In other words, it's like in Star Wars, you have, you know, the Force. It could be, you know, using the Force incorrectly or using it correctly. And I think intention is going to play a very large role in what happens when this light is fully engaging the people of this world. If their intention is in one direction, which could be peace or war, then there's going to be a shift in mass consciousness one direction or the other. And the more confused people are, the more insecure they are, and the less certain they are of who they are inside, their inner divinity, it's going to lead them down a path where they just get more confusion. But if they allow the light to actually work in their favor, and just ask the questions inwardly of what they need then I believe the answers will surface, because all that information is within our DNA, and that junk DNA really isn't junk after all. It contains the answers that people have been looking for centuries. What's happened in the past is that people have either embraced science or philosophical or religious connotations for their lives, and the Earth has gone through this kind of a shift quite a number of times. If the people of this world want to truly advance, they need to seek peace, and they need to understand their own divinity and how those two pieces together create this world and bring it into a new stage of reality.
All right, Jerry, we're out of time. Ladies and gentlemen, I wish we had more time. Jerry, stay on the phone with me for a minute, and let me say, live long and prosper. My friends call me Steel Eye, and my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.